the champagne. Pop. It's my house. Come on. Turn it up.
Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio. This is Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Hello there, and welcome to a very special edition of Cleveland Browns Daily here on ESPN 850 WKNR. Many of you remember the Cleveland Browns Foundation Radiothon, where we auctioned off all kinds of great prizes. To these two gentlemen, there was no prize greater than the opportunity to co-host Cleveland Browns Daily, and that is what is happening today. So it is my pleasure to introduce you my two co-hosts for the day. First off, the inventor of the self-retweet. If you have ever retweeted yourself on Twitter, you owe this man a big debt of gratitude for making it not only popular, not only acceptable, but cool to retweet yourself, the one and only. You can follow him on Twitter at CleveTA, that's C-L-E-V-T-A, Tariq Adam, a.k.a. Tariq.
What is up, man? How are you?
Yes, here's your music, your requested music here.
Yeah, Charles in charge. Honor of Scott Bale from the RNC last night.
How about the fact that he spoke at the RNC because he literally like just ran into Trump somewhere and Trump's like, hey, do you want to come speak at the RNC?
Sounds about right.
It does sound.
Where's Nicole Eggert at least? I want to see her. I want to see Scott.
Popping out of a cake somewhere. Yes. And then the other co-host today, you've heard him call this show many, many times. Cleve TA, you've heard referenced on the show for his excellent tweeting. But I don't know if you ever called in before, Tark?
I have not.
It's hurtful, though. Why not?
First time, long time.
And there it is, Scotty Buckeye, Scott Lichtenstein. Scotty Buckeye, welcome in studio. Welcome to the show.
I appreciate it. Looking forward to it.
We're very happy to have you here. So, gentlemen, I know you've been thinking a lot about this. So let's start with you first, though, Tariq, because to invent something as mainstream as the self-retweet, there must be a great story. What is your first recollection of when you first retweeted yourself on Twitter?
That's a good question. I don't remember the exact moment. I'm sure it had to do with one of my many predictions.
Mm-hmm.
Probably with the NFL.
You are a predictor on Twitter. And just so you know, it's not just about, you know, you making prediction on there. You've gotten yourself to the point where you're out with Jason McIntyre. You do make some appearances on there. So this is, if you're somebody, you know, you listen to the kid and the kid says, you know, we're going to go to the window. Tariq, not a bad person to follow for window advice.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yes.
Appreciate that. But yeah, I don't remember the exact time, but look, I don't have the same platform you have, so I have to get my opinions out there. And, you know, not going to lie, I like to pat myself on the back when I get
Who doesn't?
Right. Wait, can I jump in here?
Yeah.
I like to also rename Tariq the mysterious deleter.
Listen, you have two choices. Matt Hardy, first of all, be a fan of delete. But you have two choices when you make a prediction. If I think it's good for business to self-retweet the right ones and delete the wrong ones. I don't think there's anything wrong with
Tariq
that.
Tariq wanted Christian Hackenberg. While the Browns lose, they could pick him. I went to go back and find this. It was deleted. I have his Twitter feed. So if he's going to get credit for the self-retweet, we also got to call him self-deleter.
I don't believe that at all.
There's no evidence. Unless you have a screenshot for me, yeah. I don't think that we can believe that. So when you guys thought about this, when you guys won this opportunity, what was your hope for these 2 hours? What were you hoping to accomplish here today?
I just wanted to talk about the Browns, have a little roundtable action. I love the NFL.
Yes.
If you follow me on Twitter, I talk about it all the time. So
yes, you do.
Figure why not come on and let's talk about it on air.
And so as a way to kind of take a little bit of air out of both of your balloons, I'm just going to come out and admit a fact, which is we are sitting with the three-time winners of the Jacuzzi Fantasy Football League. That's my fantasy football league. And Tariq and Scott have come together under the team name Arrogance, and they have backed up that bravado. I'm surprised we haven't seen any self-retweets about that, but that bravado with three championships. So I just want to say congratulations to you guys. Very, very well done in a very, what I would consider to be as competitive a league as there is.
And it's a star-studded league. We have WWE wrestlers that are on
yes,
there. We actually
yes.
forced the retirement.
We forced the retirement of the Bella Twins. They began in the jacuzzi. They started in the jacuzzi, and now they can't make the club when they're in the tub, so they're out.
They're out.
Yeah, they've been out.
And we got Andy Sims, Agent of the Stars.
Agent of the Stars, the kid.
The kid. We got Jacuzzi Ricky.
Jacuzzi Ricky, for whom the league is named. Sonny the Doctor, Wasco.
Yeah, we got it all. So
when it comes to fantasy football going the window and football observations, would you, Tara, consider yourself a rookie or a veteran?
A veteran.
A veteran. Yes. Yes, indeed. So, gentlemen, let's start with the Cleveland Browns, because I know we've got a lot to get to today. At 1:30, bottom of the first hour here today, Jeff Hobson, our friend from CincinnatiBengals.com, is going to be with us, talk about the Bengals as we continue our opponent preview. So you've got that going on. We'll also do in the CBD replay, we'll trip back down memory lane with Nate Orchard. We'll look at the linebackers. But we're going to do a lot of just kind of football talk today. So 216-578-0850 is the way to get on board with us. We're going to kind of go through. We're going to look at each division. We're going to pick winners for you. Playoffs, Super Bowl, Rookie of the Year. Whatever these guys want to talk about from a football standpoint, we'll do that. But it is Cleveland Browns Daily. And before we get into, you know, everything, I just want to get your sense of how you feel about the change, because it's, we know the Browns change after change after change after change. But as I tell the story, and if I could, maybe I should tweet this out and then I'll retweet it in the future. Back there was a period last year where I was asked by Jason Lockenfor from CBS if I could pick a coach and general manager for the Browns, a duo, once it was clear that this was all going on. I had said Sashi Brown and Hugh Jackson. So we'll find out if I know anything. But so far, this regime, I think, off to a good start. Wanted to get your take on, you know, Hugh Jackson. First of all, we'll go through Hugh Jackson with both of you. Your impressions of the new head coach of the Cleveland Browns, who spawned the Hugh world order.
Yeah, I love the hire. I actually wanted him as well back later in the season when it looked like that Pettine wasn't going to survive. I thought that Hugh would be a perfect candidate. You know, he did a nice job in Oakland, even though his record didn't necessarily indicate that, you know, 500 type teams, but he didn't really have much talent over there. And he got,
and they were doing great before Campbell got hurt that year.
Exactly. And he maximized the talent, to be honest with you. And what he did with Cincinnati and their personnel and just the real creative schemes that he came up with, I think were really impressive. And I like the hire, and I think they're moving in the right direction.
Here's what I got to say. The old adage is defense wins championships, but I also think in this NFL, you need an explosive offense. And I'm, for the first time in a long time, I'm excited to watch an offense that could put points on the board and use their playmakers and put them in the right position to win. And it kind of takes me way back to the days of Lindy Infante with the timing offense, but that offense is going up and down the field, and I'm hoping Hugh Jackson could bring that
over on Lindy Infante references. His cash for the day. I like that, Scott. Well done. So let me ask you guys this, because have you seen, either one of you watched All or Nothing?
I've watched two episodes.
Okay. I would recommend that you watch. As a football fan, I think it's great. And what struck me about that was, and I've said this a couple times before, but I don't mind repeating myself. What struck me about that was the way that Bruce Arians connects with his players, relates to them, motivates them, and also you take his football, you know, strategy genius aside, but just I think in the NFL, it's so critical for a coach to be able to reach his players, to resonate with them, and then to motivate them. And I think that as long as he's there, he is going to make sure that he's getting what you said, the most out of his players and the most out of his talent. And I'm hopeful from the limited time that I've seen and from all the players that have walked through this studio and guys that I've talked to in the locker room or out on the field, that what they cite is that Hugh Jackson's ability to relate with them, resonate with them, and then motivate them. And I think that really is becoming more and more important. And the fact that he's a strategy genius on top of it is huge. But that's what I'm hoping that he can do for Cleveland, what Bruce Arians has done in terms of setting the culture for the Cardinals.
To draw it back to Cleveland, didn't Ty Lue just do that with the Cavs? The team had all these superstars, and they couldn't, you know, had trouble winning, and they, Ty Lue, the team came together and put a championship on the board. So I'm hoping that Hugh Jackson could do the same.
Well, I think so much of it about, you know, in this day of professionals with, you know, big contracts and a lot of different personalities, it really is about being able to, as you said, get the most out of your talent. And I think one of the things that fans were so frustrated by in the 2014 season, and I'm not saying that there are fingers to point at any one person or set of individuals, but that you had a team that was the most expensive and high, most expensive and old defense, full with big names, and you were coming off of a 7-9 season, which for the Browns was an exciting thing, and you were expected to build on it, and it fell flat. And I think that, you know, from talking to Matt, it's the coach's ability to reach and get the best out of the players that's the key, and I think that we have a staff finally that can do that, which I think will be very, very important. Now, I know you are an analytics guy over there. You're an analytics guy over there, Scott and Tarek. So what do you think so far of just the overall philosophy? And we'll start with free agency. What would you think of the free agent approach here?
I love it. I think the fact is that to win in the NFL, you got to win through the draft. And I love what Sashi's done, brought a bunch of draft picks to here and drafted well. And I think you add free agency in the NFL when a team's ready to go for the championship. But I think what you do is build the core up, build the playmakers up, and let the team gun together, and then add that one piece at the end to bring the championship home.
Yeah, I mean, you've seen in the NFL in the past with Haynesworth, all these big names in the past that once you sign a huge contract, you just don't get the same return on investment. So, you know, their strategy.
Look at Ndamukong last year.
Exactly. You just don't. So getting guys who have, you know, had decent seasons in the past, young veterans, who maybe are coming off a disappointing season, like a Raheem Moore or a DeMario Davis, who, you know, are on shorter-term deals that are kind of show-me deals. And so I think that's the way you kind of have to approach free agency, is you kind of plug in and see if you can kind of pick up a diamond or two. And then, like Scott said, when you're ready to contend, that's when you really go for the big name, the Josh Norman type with the Redskins. You know, the Redskins made the playoffs. They did not have a good secondary, and they had an opportunity to pick up a guy like Norman, and you're going to overpay for him, but that's fine because they're you know, contenders at this point. So,
And the other thing too is, I mean, you look at Robert Griffin III. Again, these are guys that have good pedigrees. Even the trade that they made, I know it was in a free agent signing, but the trade that they made for Jamar Taylor, former second round pick out of Boise State, Raheem Moore, former second round pick out of UCLA, RG3, the number two overall pick, a guy who obviously went on to be the NFL Rookie of the Year that season. And you're getting these guys on what you said, basically like prove it deal. So you have a young, hungry team, and now you're bringing in some veterans, a veteran who's also hungry and wants to come in and feels like he has something to prove.
Plus, I think that 26, 27-year-old guy versus what we've done in the past regimes, got guys in their 30s that are at the tail end of their careers. They're not going to really win for you anymore.
Well, that's the thing, right? RG3, and again, I've said this from day one. I've been impressed from what I've seen with him. Has there been inconsistency? Sure, but he's learning a new offense, and he's trying to rebuild himself after really a year completely inactive. I know that we're gonna find out, because he's coming in here. He's working extremely hard. He knows this is his, you know, really last chance to prove. He's going to do everything he can. Hugh and Pep are going to do everything they can. So we're going to find out if RG3 can play at a high level in the NFL.
And if not, you're going to have a high pick anyway.
Next year? Absolutely.
Sean Watson. That's your boy out there. I love him.
You throw it. That's your guy. Okay. All right. So we've got that, and then just kind of overall, what's your overall take on just the vibe right now? Because I think, you know, it's funny. If you had said to me coming into 2015, like I think, you know, 5-11, let's call it 6-10. Maybe there's a little upside on there. Certainly there's some downside there, given where they are. I could come out of this season, regardless of what the record is, say it's 5-11, feeling great about this team if I see better football being played in December than September. I see growth. I see enthusiasm. I see a willingness to bring it every day. And you see development of talent, because this is a young team, and the key will be to see these guys getting better going forward.
Yeah, and I don't think it's not a win-loss type of thing for me, at least. You know, the expectations are lower, but again, you want to see a young team improve, kind of like Jacksonville we talked about. So Jacksonville, you know, had a good couple drafts in a row. They didn't have a great win-loss record last year, but they showed a ton of improvement and ton of progress. And then, you know, going down the road, as you get more draft picks, I mean, the Browns are going to be loaded next year with draft picks. The next 2 years, could have two top five, maybe two top 10 picks. That's where you really continue to progress. And, you know, I think it's not a win-loss record for me. It's more of just signs of improvement and showing growth from the young guys.
For me, it's in December, being that team that no one else in the league wants to play. Even though the record may not show it, they're a team that no one wants to line up with on Sunday.
A tough, right.
And a team heading for the playoffs does not want to come into Northeast Ohio to play the Browns. Win-loss, you know, guys like Coleman and guys that can make big plays and beat them. So that's what I'm looking for. So that way you could parlay that into the offseason. And again, I think you're probably still another year away from free agency, but taking that momentum, drafting well, and having a really good season next year and getting ready to get in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think you have a good opportunity to get your season started in the right way, week one at Philly, because not only is that a game that could help you with their first round draft pick, it's a way to get some confidence on the road against a team that in itself is in a little bit of transition.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think Philly's that good this year, to be honest.
Me neither.
I talk about the Eagles a little bit, but you know, I think they're ripe for a bottom five type of
I hope so.
The only caveat, the division's not very good. I think Dallas.
I disagree with you. I disagree with you. I think Dallas is going to be good. I think the Redskins are very solid. And I think the Giants are going to be good. The Giants addressed a lot of their key needs.
Yep. I think it's an overrated division. Time will tell.
Time will tell. We'll find out. We certainly will find out. All right, we're going to take our first break right there. By the way, Beatbox, Matt Noble, friend of the show, wanted me to let everybody know that Tarik Adam was a defensive stopper on our high school basketball team. Go Lions. He said to give him a shout out. Beatbox right now preparing for a big exam right now, an advanced statistics exam. He has fallen off the air wagon, I've been told. Beatbox, your brain's fried, but let's go do it. Let's go. All right, when we come back, let's go around the league, shall we? We'll talk a little bit about our season predictions. We'll take a look at maybe the AFC and the NFC and make some predictions there. We'll also take your phone calls if you want, 216-578-0850. It's the Radiothon Winners episode of Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Tarik Adam, Scott Lichtenstein, CBD.
are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, the Foundation Radiothon winners, Tarik Adam, Scott Lichtenstein with me. I think, do we have to call you Tarik Adam? I mean, I know it is your name and all.
No, I like my Twitter handle better.
At CleveTA, CLEVTA, at CleveTA with us here today. Before we get into going around the divisions and making some predictions for 2016, I just want to take some time, not even some time, I'm just going to be very, very brief. I want you all who are listening to go to my Twitter. I just tweeted out what I consider to be a must-read for Browns fans and really for anybody who has been impacted, affected, or upset about what happened with Isaiah Crowell and the police officers. Obviously, we know about the regretful post that he made that was flat-out wrong and what he had to do. But the tweet that I am directing you to takes you to the Dallas Fallen Officer Foundation on Facebook and talks about Crow recently accepted an opportunity to travel to Dallas to go with the Dallas Fallen Officer Foundation to the funeral of one of the fallen police officers, spend a full day there talking, learning, becoming educated. And I think that, and I'll just close with this is the final paragraph. Crowell's story is a path of redemption that parallels the experience of Daniel entering the lion's den. Crowell entered the most unlikely venue surrounded by thousands of police officers, which could have been the most hostile environment he could have ever imagined himself walking into. But by the grace of God, he was accepted with open arms. As leaders in the police community, it is our duty to establish and maintain the public trust. We in the Dallas Police Department are hurting, and now it is time to start the healing process by creating greater understanding in the community. My interactions with Mr. Crowell demonstrates that mutual understanding is possible as long as both parties are willing to listen. That's from Sergeant Demetric Penny from the Dallas Police Department and the president of the Dallas Fallen Officer Foundation. So it is something, and this is what he said also, based on my 17 years of experience in law enforcement, I found the meeting with Mr. Crowell to be authentic and reflective of the truest meaning of community policing. He writes a ton, and you can tell he was very impacted by this and that Isaiah Crowell was very impacted by this. And it's not something we need to start a big discussion on, but I think that sometimes when you do something that is the equivalent of hitting rock bottom, you have an opportunity to stay there or you have the opportunity to learn from it and bounce off of it. And I'm hopeful, as many are, that this will actually turn out to be something that was so awful will turn out to be something that is a blessing, an open dialogue, and turn somebody like Isaiah Crowell into very much a voice of reason and somebody who can be a supporter of all of these things. So something that I certainly urge everybody to check out because it's raw. I read it and got tears in my eyes just reading the thing. It's long, but definitely take a chance to read that and see how you feel coming out after that. All right, we got a quick question for you two guys on Twitter. They want to know what you guys think about the Terrell Pryor project. Tarik, I'm going to start with you because Scotty Buckeye will have no ability to be unbiased here. He's been scouting Terrell Pryor, and I know you guys are going to be like, there's no way that what he's about to say is true. Oh, but it's true. He was scouting Terrell Pryor as a fifth grader on the courts, on the playgrounds, and has known about this guy for about, 20 years, it seems like. I've been hearing about Terrell Pryor. So he's not going to be objective. I'll let you talk. Don't worry. You're going to get to talk about him. But what do you think, Tarik, about Terrell Pryor?
Well, I mean, he's got great size. He obviously has great speed, quickness, all that. It's going to be a process. And at minimum, it would be nice to see at least a goal line presence from him.
I will say that of all – and again – it's not like I've been around the NFL forever, but this will be my fifth training camp where I've been close and fifth offseason with the team. He has made more progress from a year ago to now than anybody I've ever seen in 1 year. And he actually looks like not only a receiver, but a good receiver. And as I've said, the coaches, I've spoken with some of the coaches, he's calling them, when he's allowed to, every night, going over film, wanting to get better. And I really think if there's one person that could benefit, and I know these rookies are going to benefit from Chad Johnson being here, but if there's one person who should just try to stick to Chad Johnson and learn everything he can, it's Terrell Pryor. I remember we went to Buffalo for the joint practice. He couldn't get off the line of scrimmage. Chad Johnson, much like Chris Jericho in wrestling, the man of 1,001 holds, Chad Johnson says he's got at least 100 different releases against bump and run, and I think he could be invaluable for helping Terrell Pryor.
We're just talking about relationships and Hugh Jackson. I think Hugh Jackson being here is going to be a blessing for Terrell Pryor. And I think that,
yeah.
And a team, again, that we talked about this before, a team that's looking for some playmakers. Terrell's still very young, and as Tarek said, very big size, great hands. And I think that, you know, a team like this is a perfect situation for him where he could like hone in his skills this year and make an impact. And, you know, we could find out with this year if he's going to make it or not.
And obviously not comparing the two, but Jimmy Graham, I mean, he barely played one season at Miami before getting drafted, and he actually essentially sat a year with the Saints and then blew up. You know, not comparing the two, but I mean, it takes a little bit of time. And so last year was essentially his first season, you know, learning the position. So, you know, you got to give him some time, and it's great that he's showing progress like that. And this is the type of team that you can afford to kind of wait and get another redshirt year out of him, I guess, and get a few plays in there. And then, you know, next year or two, if it succeeds, then, you know, you've got yourself a potential real talent on the outside.
You do, and he's a guy that when you look at this roster and you look at the wide receiver position, they made obviously a huge investment in the draft there, but the one guy that is unlike anyone else, considering that Josh Gordon isn't here from a physical standpoint, is Terrell Pryor. And if he can become something for you, and maybe ultimately if he struggles with press, but you see his route running's improved, his hands are improved, he's good in traffic, he could end up being a big slot for you. You know, there are a lot of options in today's NFL what you can do with a guy like that, much in the way that Jordan Matthews was used by Chip Kelly.
Or Larry Fitzgerald.
Marcus Colston, as you saw at the beginning of All or Nothing. He wasn't so much asked to play in the slot. He was told that he will be playing in the slot. All right, let's take a look here. We go around the divisions. We're only going to have time for a couple here. So let's start in the AFC. AFC East, we know Tom Brady suspended for 4 games there. Does that matter, or is this the New England Patriots division once again?
I mean, I think it's still the Patriots as the team to beat. You know, first 4 games, I don't think it's going to be as easy. And people are saying, oh, it's a 3-1 because they get a couple teams at home like Buffalo and Miami. I don't really buy into Jimmy Garoppolo. I don't think he's that great of a player, and it's a tough position to be put in. But even if they went 0-4 with Tom coming back and with that division, I think they'll still make the playoffs. One team that I do like, I like the Jets a lot. I think they're a really talented team. They're obviously missing a quarterback. There's a contract dispute with Fitzpatrick. And we talked about this, you know, before we were on air, Nathan. Wouldn't it be a perfect spot for a guy like Josh McCown? If you're the Jets, why not give up a 5th-round pick? Why not insert a veteran like that who's played with Brandon Marshall, by the way, in the past, and Matt Forte has had success with the Bears.
Blew up with them.
They got a really good defense. They got good skill position guys. I mean, if I'm the Jets, I would much rather do that than overpay Ryan Fitzpatrick, who, to me, is one of the most overrated quarterbacks in the league. He always has a good start and finishes poorly. Terrible fourth-quarter quarterback, by the way. Bad quarterback when he's from behind. All the stats prove that out. So I think the Jets, if they can somehow figure out that position, I think they're going to at least have a wild card position, maybe fight with the Patriots for the AFC East.
Forte and Marshall, those guys are both pushing 30, getting up there in age, and I have never bet against Bill Belichick. I can't believe
Bill Belichick didn't get Matt Forte. That seemed like the perfect fit for them. They could have got him for the same money they gave Chris Hogan.
But they get Deion Lewis back. If you figure he's healthy, he's going to be your pass catcher out of the backfield. You still have LeGarrette Blount, I believe, that's going to run in between the tackles. So, and who knows what the contract demands were. Who knows, you know, if he just wanted to go to the better opportunity with the Jets, who don't have anybody back there. So he'd have the whole position to himself. So, we don't know what actually happened behind the scenes.
Yeah, Bills, I don't know. In some ways, I think the Rex Ryan era is over. Now, they were plus 20 in differential last year, but still finished at 8-8. I like Tyrod Taylor. I think the jury's still somewhat out on him, but the Dolphins, to me, seem to be a team that has some talent and the opportunity to maybe move north, especially on the offensive side of the ball, if Adam Gase can get the best out of Ryan Tannehill. They do have some weapons down there, but to me, this is still and will be for a very long time the Patriots division.
Completely agree.
They're just the class. They're the class. Until somebody beats them, that's like one of those things that's like, until you beat them, you're not doubting them.
And I like the Martellus Bennett pickup.
Oh, my God. I love the Martellus Bennett pickup.
Perfect situation, 2 tight end set. Adds another weapon.
They're going to be nasty.
Yeah.
And I Bill Belichick's going to put together a scheme for the first 4 weeks that he's going to pull out maybe 2, maybe 3 wins, and they'll be fine when Brady comes back.
I think for them, honestly, it's a good thing, though, to get to see Jimmy Garoppolo for 4 games. So you have a sense of, is he the guy that we can pass the torch to? And I think you'll get some semblance of that. All right, we got Jeff Hobson from CincinnatiBengals.com coming up next. So let me ask you this before we just start here. Do you guys think that the Bengals can repeat atop the AFC North?
No, I think it's the Steelers division, to be honest. And I think the Cincinnati Bengals actually will take a step back. That's one of the teams I think are going to regress. They lose Marvin Jones, Mohamed Sanu, and Eifert's out for I don't know how long with that injury. They didn't really replace any of them. They got Brandon LaFell, who I don't really trust. He's getting up there in age. Tyler Boyd is a good wide receiver out of Pitt that I liked in the draft, but it's too much, I think, right away for a rookie to kind of step in those shoes. Didn't really add at all on the defensive side. I think Carlos Dansby went there. But besides that, not too much. So I think it's a lot of pressure to put on Dalton. Plus, you lose Hugh Jackson. So you got to replace, you know, an offensive coordinator. So I think they take a step back, and I think it's the Steelers' division to win. If they had Martavis Bryant for a full season, he's obviously out for the year, suspended, I would have picked Pittsburgh to win the Super Bowl. But, you know, they have struggled. Ben has struggled without Martavis Bryant. If you look at his splits on and off the field, Ben goes from an average quarterback with him off the field to a superstar when Martavis plays. It just adds such a big element to the team.
How much stock?
I think Ladarius Green was a nice signing by them.
He's never healthy, though.
Right.
I mean, you have to bank on that.
How much stock you put in Le'Veon Bell being healthy?
I mean, he's the best running back in the NFL if he's healthy all around. But he hasn't done it in a couple of years, so we'll see. But I think they'll be kind of a wild card type team. But I still think, you know, again, Cincinnati is going to step back. I think Pittsburgh wins that division. And
looking at the division,
Sammy Coates is a big. If he can take a step forward, I don't think that he can. But he's an interesting guy.
He's got great
speed.
He's a good spark guy. Horrible hands.
Horrible.
If you watched him at Auburn. You know, looks great until the ball's actually coming
thrown to him, which is a problem. Yep. All right, when we come back, Jeff Hobson from Bengals.com will be our guest talking about the Bengals and what really will be the impact. You talk about those defections on the offensive side of the ball. I think none bigger than Hugh Jackson, now the head coach of the Cleveland Browns. Talk with Hobby right after this.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Tarik Adam, Scott Lichtenstein. He's at Cleve TA. We'll just call him that. Cleve TA is right here, the number one TA in all of Cleveland. We go now to the Ohio Business Machines Hotline, bring in Jeff Hobson from Bengals.com. Jeff, how are you?
How you doing, guys?
Good, man. Always a pleasure to talk to you. I have no word. Just under 2 weeks away from training camp, the Bengals getting ready to get back at it and defend their AFC North Division crown. But let's start with kind of the obvious Browns-Bengals storyline or subplot, and that would be Hugh Jackson here now. Ken Zampezi elevated to offensive coordinator. So what's going to change for the Bengals on offense?
I don't think much is going to change. Kenny Zampezi's a highly regarded guy in the league. He's been with Andy Dalton every step of the way.
Yep.
And you know, Hugh relied on him a lot. Hugh obviously brought his own personality and his own, you know, set of ideas to calling a game. So that might be different, maybe the way a game is called. But I think the versatility, I think the creativity, I think the ability to get what Hugh brought to the table was he gave Andy a lot of options. I think Kenny was a big factor in that. And I think they feel like that's the big thing going with Kenny Zampezi. There's no loss in translation. You get the same playbook. You get the same players. And, you know, obviously Hugh Jackson's a hell of a coach. And I think Kenny Zampezi's out to prove that, you know, he learned a lot with Hugh, and that he also helped Hugh a lot, and I think it's they're banking on that. And that said, they know that Hugh's up there oiling up something. So
we're
that's
trying.
The thing. That's the tough part about losing Hugh. He's in the division, and he gives a team that was dying air. You know, he's a hell of a coach, and that's the big thing is that he went to a division rival.
Looking at the running back situation, what do you think about Jeremy Hill and Bernard? Is it going to be more of a running back by committee splitting carries, or is Jeremy Hill going to get the carries, or Bernard? How do you look at that playing out?
That's a great question. You know, I think you're going to see more of them. I think they're going to be used together more this year, because I think particularly early on, as they try to shore up their receiver position, they're going to be after Brandon LaFell and AJ Green, they're going to be young and inexperienced back there, receiver. So, and Tyler Eifert is we don't know when he is going to come back at some point in September, but they don't know when. So I think you're going to see them relying on both Jeremy and Geo, and I wouldn't be surprised to see them used together more than they have been. But basically, it's a game-by-game, matchup-by-matchup decision on who's playing when. You know, when does Hill get the call? Does Geo get the call? But I think, you know, generally, you know, Geo's the third down back. Jeremy's the red zone and goal line back. Things can change. They may take a series off, you know. They may take a couple series off. But we'll see how Kenny handles that, but I think you're pretty much going to, you know, generally Hill's the big back in the big back situations. Geo's the third down guy, but I think they're going to see him together more as they try to get that offense entrenched with the new receivers.
Hey, Jeff, you mentioned the wide receiver position. Obviously, losing Mohamed Sanu and Marvin Jones is a big loss. They did bring in Brandon LaFell and drafted a guy that I like, Tyler Boyd, out of Pittsburgh. How do you think LaFell still has anything left in him, and how has Boyd looked so far?
Well, I think it's hard to tell on LaFell, really. I think he looks better than he did last year. I know he got ripped last year, and in camp he was a little bit inconsistent catching the ball, but I chalk that up to being in the new offense with a new quarterback. I think they feel like that this guy is a year removed from being a 74-catch guy for a Super Bowl champion. And he looked more like that than he did look like the guy coming off of injury. And I think that will get better. And Boyd, I think, is just exactly what he's advertised. They really like him. I mean, he's a guy, granted, we're not in pads yet, but he showed that he knows the game. He's aware. He looks like he's tough to handle in space. He can do a lot of different things. He can line up in a slot. They're hoping he'll be able to line up outside. You know, just like Hugh really used Sanu in a lot of different situations, I think Boyd has the ability to do that. He played a lot of running back and quarterback in high school. He did a lot of different things for Pitt. So, you know, he's all a 6'2", too. You know, I thought coming out when you hear Howie Well, they don't run a lot of long patterns, nothing's over 7 yards. He's a big kid. You know, he's 6'2". He's all a 6'2". He's got good size. And he can move. He's fast, and he's got. I think he's going to be a hell of a player. The problem is rookie receivers historically don't produce. They're not going to give you what Sanu and Jones did when they were fourth year guys. I think Boyd could eventually be better than what Jones and Sanu gave them, but he won't this year. You know, historically, so they've got to get it from LaFell. They got to get it from the running backs, and they got to get it from Ice.
Let's look at the secondary. It was possible you could have lost a lot of that secondary this offseason, but they retained Adam Jones. They retained George Aloka. Reggie Nelson, Leon Hall departed, but you had William Jackson III with your first-round pick, number 24. They've made a habit of drafting corners early, Denard earlier than that. What's kind of that secondary going to look like, and is that you expect that to be a strength once again this year?
Yeah, I think it will be a strength. They lose Reggie. It's tough to lose Reggie, but in Aloka and Sean Williams, Sean Williams played very well off the bench last year. That's why they thought they could afford to lose Reggie. Sean Williams is a heady, solid player who will hit you. Adam Jones, my opinion, is going to be one of the top four or five corners in the game. You know, Denard, you don't know about Denard because he's been banged up, but they think he can be a, you know, they think at times he was their best corner at okay. times when he was healthy. He just can't stay healthy. So I think you're going to get more of the same back there. They love their guys. To play bump and run, man on man. Drake Kirkpatrick gets banged. He gets criticized, but all I know is these guys do not give up points. They don't give up big passing days. I think Kirkpatrick only gave up 2 touchdowns last year. Look at the numbers on this defense as a team. They gave up the second fewest points in the league. In the wild card game, the one touchdown Pittsburgh scored, that great offense. It was later that they said they didn't score a touchdown. So they basically held Pittsburgh without a touchdown in that playoff game. That's a hell of an offense. So I think that secondary is, I think it's intact. And I think it's intact, and I think they'll probably give them they get about the same they did last year, which was a hell of a year.
One of the guys that I love talking to and loved watching play and learning from and getting stories from was Carlos Dansby. How's he fit in down there, and have you had the opportunity to really kind of talk with him?
Well, you guys know him, and that's exactly right. You described him very well. Great guy to have around your room. He's a good, solid veteran. Does all the right things. Does all the right things. Takes great care of his body. Was just talking to Vinny Ray about that. One of the Bengals linebackers, about how he helps set a tone. He's going to fit in. They're going to put him in at Sam. He hasn't played Sam in about 7 years, but
yeah.
Marvin will get mad. I use the word Sam. Essentially thinks like I'm trying to say something. Talking about something. I know something. But basically, the linebackers, those outside linebackers, are pretty much interchangeable. But Dansby will be over to tight end. I think he hasn't done that in a while, but he's versatile enough to do that. So
with perfect cover.
Help for the. I'm sorry.
He can cover. I mean, that's one of the reasons. Yeah.
Yeah, he had great numbers against the pass. The thing is, he only missed about three or four plays. Didn't he play like 99.7% of the snaps or something?
He was a stud. Yeah.
He won't do that, and he won't do that now. He'll be playing. He'll play me about 40, 45, 50%, and he'll be playing about 40, 50% of the snaps. So I think he'll be better because of that. So they'll be, with perfect health, they'll have Vinny Ray will be able to slip in there at will, who's started like 20 games the last 2 years. So, they're pretty, they should be pretty good. With Dansby, he makes them about as deep as they've been a linebacker in a while.
Back on the offensive side of the ball, obviously Tyler Eifert's a huge part of that offense, and he's coming off of ankle surgery. What's his comeback look like? Is he going to miss the start of the season, or when do you think he'll be back?
No, no. Great question. Marvin likes to put the shroud over it. So all we know is that it doesn't seem like he's going to be back for much of the preseason. That was what they said when it was first announced. So, but that could change. Who knows? He could emerge the second week of training camp. But I think they're banking on. From what I understand, it's he gets back late in the preseason, and they're crossing their fingers for the opener, And if he's not ready for the opener, then they hope it's not going to be much after that. But they got a tough September. It's they open on the road. The first two games are on the road, in New York against the Jets, and then they go to Pittsburgh, and big game out of the gate, and then they come back and they open their home season against Denver, the Super Bowl champs. So. Then they get perfect back 4 days later. They open. They play Miami on a Thursday night at home. So it's just not a they got to get out of the gate, And they may be doing it with some of the. They may be relying on some of their depth and on some of these young receivers.
And who is the backup there at tight end? If I forget.
Well, they got a guy Tyler Croft, who last year was a third round pick out of Rutgers, and they really liked him when Eifert was out. Remember, Eifert missed a good bit of time. In December, because of a Mike Mitchell shot that gave him a concussion, and he missed a good deal of time in December. And Croft, they did not have Eifert when they played for the AFC for that top playoff seed in Denver. They did not have Eifert, and they got a good game out of Croft. They did not have Eifert. Croft caught he turned into actually Croft was one of AJ McCarron's go-to guys, a backup quarterback. They kind of had a reunion of that preseason. They showed real good chemistry in preseason. No, they like Croft. He's a big kid. He can run. He can catch. He's a good blocker. And, it's a pretty, obviously Eifert's a Pro Bowl player, a game changer. But the fact you have a guy like Croft who's that athletic and can block playing behind him, that's a pretty good option with him out of the lineup.
Jeff. 12-4 last year, trying to defend the AFC North crown. What are your expectations for this year?
It comes down to Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, Baltimore. Who knows? Three teams, but you got to flip a coin, I think. It all depends who avoids injuries. Baltimore was out of it because Flacco got hurt. Flacco stays healthy. They're in this thing. To me though, it comes down to Pittsburgh and Cincinnati, and. If Cincinnati can stop Pittsburgh's offense, I think they win. And that's 12-4, 11-5, 10-6. It's going to come down to those games in Pittsburgh.
Do you think that if let's say the Bengals don't make the playoffs, or let's say they make the playoffs and fail to win a playoff game again, is Marvin Lewis on the hot seat at all?
He's not on the hot seat, but you know where he is in his career, I don't know. I mean, he's coming in. This is his 14th season. He's 57 years old. He'll be 58. Where he is in his life and what he wants to do, that to me is more of a question. I mean, it sounds like he wants to keep going. He's really had a great run here the last 5 years in the Dalton Green era. But no, he's not on the hot seat. I can't, who knows? I mean, it all depends. People ask me that every year, and just show me how the season ends.
Right.
And if it's, it was an ugly end the last season, but, the way I think the Bengals management saw it was
they should have won.
They had the Steelers beat with a backup quarterback,
yep.
And they went 12-4 with their best record since '88.
Yep.
How do you fire a guy over that?
I found the discussion of it even absurd. I think it's ridiculous, but it is amazing that as successful as he has been, he hasn't been able to get that monkey off his back and get over that hump.
I found it also amazing that he was ripped for losing control of his team, and the team on the other side had a coach go on the field.
Right.
And had another coach grab Reggie Nelson's hair. And the Bengals were the guys ended up getting ripped for losing control. An amazing set of circumstances.
The winners rewrite history, Jeff. The winners rewrite history.
You're exactly right. Eisenhower wrote World War II, and you're exactly right. And who knows? Maybe Trump will write out of the deal again. I don't know. But you're right. The winners. You're right. Huh?
That's just
a little scary thought for him. But you're exactly right. And that's how. What was stunning to me was the national narrative of that game.
Yeah.
Was Perfect and Adam Jones got ripped, and in Cincinnati they're thinking, my God, the refs blew three plays.
Yep.
Plus they missed Joey Porter not being on the field.
On the field. Instigating.
Yeah. So hey, look, but you're right. I mean, and if the Bengals had won, Mike Tomlin would have been on the, if Jeremy Hill doesn't fumble the ball, Mike Tomlin's on the hot seat for
of
having
course.
Stuff spin out of control on his side.
Of course. You're exactly right. Well, Jeff, certainly I'm sure you're looking forward to camp getting back, getting going, football being back, and we look forward to seeing you when the Bengals and the Browns meet this year.
Sounds good. Tell Hugh to take it easy on us. He's coming out swinging.
Oh, I know he is. And we don't need to take it easy on you guys. It's our time. It's time for the Browns to make some moves here.
Well, Hugh Jackson's going to do a hell of a job up there. So it's going to be fun up there again.
It is. I'm very excited to see it actually take shape here in the coming weeks. Jeff, thank you so much, man. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. Jeff Hobson from Bengals.com, our guest there. When we come back, we'll continue our foray around the league, getting predictions from @CleveTA on Twitter. Tark. Adam, our guest host today, winner of the Foundation Radiothon, as long as Scotty Buckeye. And Scott, who do you have? You've lined up a special Buckeye guest for us. Is this true?
Yes, Mark Gibler from Buckeye Grove Rivals on the Rivals Network. Big time recruiting guy, Philadelphia fan, so we could kind of touch about the trade with him and various other topics about Ohio State. We've got to get a little Ohio State Buckeye action in here.
A little Buckeye action. That'll come your way at approximately 2 o'clock when we kick off the second hour. We'll be back right after this. We'll wrap up the AFC divisions. Talk a little Buckeyes and Eagles at the top of the hour. We've got Nate Orchard still to come and much, much more. Zagura, Adam Lichtenstein, CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily special edition as the Radiothon winner, Scott Lichtenstein, Tarek Adam, a.k.a. @SLICOSUBucks, and @CleveTA. Just no E, though. Why CleveTA did you not go Cleve, like C-L-E-V-E? Why did you go Cleve, C-L-E-V, before your T-A?
I think I followed up a buddy of ours, Cleve Lenny, And that's how he did
Cleve
it.
Lenny,
and
you're right.
So Lenny from the
Big
block.
Big Mario fan.
Yeah, huge Mario. Well, so it's the best Mario.
So I think I just added, I followed suit. By the way, Mario is opening up now in Cedar and Fairmount. Did you see that? Mad Greek is closing, and it's going to be replaced by
I need him to
Barrio.
I need him further east.
I know.
So on.
The truth of the matter is, though, Cedar Fairmount for me is probably just as far as going downtown.
I guess it's true.
I want where Paco's Tacos, see ya, Barrio. Hello. Hola.
Love Barrio.
Oh, my God. It's
best pregame Cavs spot, I think, on East 4th.
I'm like, I went to, if I had a dime for every time that I went to a Cavs game and didn't go to Barrio beforehand, I'd have zero dimes.
Just blew out his microphone. Guys.
Wow.
It's true. That's it.
Enthusiastic over there.
Kudos to Enzo Amore for the inspiration behind that. But all right, we're going to go through the divisions quickly here. We did the AFC East. We all agree Patriots are winning. Who's your sleeper team from the AFC East? I'm going to say Miami. Bienvenido a Miami.
Yeah, I think that's fine. Buffalo's the prototypical 8-8 forever.
I think it's a bunch of have-nots and haves. I think Patriots all the way.
AFC North. I think the Steelers win that division. My sleeper team. World order in the Cleveland Browns.
Steelers win it. No sleeper. I just want the Browns to look good but lose. I'm a draft pick guy. I'm sorry. I want my quarterback next year.
In an aging division, I'm going to go.
And I'm fine, but look good, for example, just to remind people.
Play close games. It's fine.
Oakland looked good after their first year, and then they picked with Khalil Mack, Derek Carr, then they picked fourth the following year with Amari Cooper. Jacksonville started to show progress with Blake Bortles, Allen Robinson, then they picked third the following year. So it's not necessarily a massive uptick in wins, but you can look good and still get that pick. Everybody, all masters can be served.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I'm with the Baltimore Ravens. I think that this is going to be your Flacco gets healthy. And they
are you wacko for Flacco?
I am not, but I think he's just one of those guys. When everyone counts him out, he always comes out and has a good season.
Is Mike Wallace just totally done?
Well, once he signed that big contract with Miami out of Pittsburgh, I felt like he didn't have much left, and you saw it. I mean, it was a bad situation last year. Teddy doesn't go deep too much, and that's really he's a one-trick pony.
Yeah.
So with Flacco, that is the one thing that Flacco does do well is go deep, but they don't have any other complimentary receivers. I mean, I guess Steve Smith's unretired now. Perryman's always hurt. I'm not sure if he'll play this year, but
Kamar Aiken came on and was a nice player for them.
It was a favorite waiver wire pickup in fantasy football last year.
Fantasy football. Yeah. I don't know if he was ever on my team. All right, let's go now to the AFC South. Last year, the Houston Texans won that division at 9-7.
This year, I have the Colts going. I think Andrew Luck's going to be back to form, and I think this is a quarterback football league, so I think that Andrew Luck will lead that team to win a division.
It's tough. I mean, it's the worst division in football, but
I think it's on the rise, though. It's a division loaded with young talent.
Yeah, and that kind of leads to my sleeper team, and most people's sleeper team is Jacksonville. I think it's kind of a popular opinion, but mine is Tennessee, and you know, obviously Marcus Mariota showed flashes last year. I mean, game one against Tampa, he was unbelievable. But they finally add a couple of solid running backs, Derrick Henry in the draft, DeMarco Murray. I mean, they had David Cobb and Antonio Andrews last year. It's pretty pathetic. So a huge upgrade there.
Yeah.
They added Rishard Matthews, who I thought the Browns should have gone after at wide receiver.
I'm not saying they didn't, but he ended up with Tennessee. I do think it's interesting. They're coming out and trying to make it sound like Dorial Green Beckham's not starting. That guy should be starting. The guy's a monster. And if he's not starting, send him over here.
Exactly. Well, I mean, look, he's still raw. He's still a young guy. We'll see how the preseason goes. But I think overall, you look at last year, if you look at point differential, which is a really big indicator of, you know, hopefully success, they really underperformed. Based upon their point differential, they should have been about 3 to 4 games better than where they were. I think they're definitely going to bounce back. They're 2-6 in one score games, which again is another kind of, you think they'll revert to the mean. I think that's, if you look,
kinda, that
you
know, could be a thing, though.
As the kid says, go to the window.
Is that Blake Bortles, though?
What's that?
Are you talking about the Titans?
No, talking about the Titans.
Okay. Yeah Mariota.
I think you know, their win total in Vegas is 5.5. I think that's one of my favorite kind of sleeper over teams. I think they're definitely due for kind of a 7-8 win season. And, you know, if Mariota really, you know, lives up to his potential. You know, that could be a potential wild card team in that division. It's not like their schedule is that difficult.
I think the Texans are still going to be in the mix because their D is so good. I don't know if we know what we've got in Brock Osweiler. I happen to think Lamar Miller is going to have an excellent season there. I think they made some good picks to give some speed there alongside DeAndre Hopkins.
Actually, a sleeper in the draft, Tyler Irvin, is a guy that I liked at San Jose. Small back, but he's really good out of the backfield, catches the ball really well. I think he's a guy. Lamar Miller has not stayed healthy in a couple of years.
Lamar Miller's good last year.
He's good when he can play. Exactly. But, you know, he's not always healthy.
I'm buying. I'm in. Yeah.
He could be. Still have DeAndre Hopkins.
He could end up on. And I don't even know what our team's going to be called this year. We need a new team name again. We need a reboot. Yes. So I got the Colts win that division. I think the Texans are going to be a tough. I think this division is going to be better. This is a division to me. If you could buy like futures in a division, I'm buying futures in the AFC South. I think that is a division absolutely on the rise. AFC West, Broncos defending Super Bowl champion. Big question marks at quarterback. And for everybody who's like, well, they could have just signed Brock Osweiler. To me, if John Elway saw Brock Osweiler play on this team and thought that he could lead them to another Super Bowl, there's no way they let Brock Osweiler walk out the door.
Completely agree. They knew Peyton Manning was going to retire. You have a huge, huge hole there. To let him go, that kind of shows you. And Brock Osweiler was horrible down the field. Didn't he have the worst completion percentage down the field? You kind of need that to be a quarterback. And this we were talking about with the Jets before. This is another perfect spot for Josh McCown. Like if you're John Elway, pick up the phone. I mean, Mark Sanchez and Trevor Siemian. I saw Siemian play at Northwestern. He couldn't even play in the Big Ten. He was terrible.
McCown was beating that Denver Broncos team last year. You should have won that game.
You stick McCown on that team, I mean, he can easily win that division, and they're definitely Super Bowl contenders again. You don't ask him to do too much. You've got good receivers there, and you just rely on that defense. But, I think it's going to be a battle in that division.
Yes, it is. So your winner in the AFC West?
I'll go with the San Diego Chargers.
I got Oakland Raiders. I like Khalil Mack out of defense.
You have the Raiders. Okay, those are your sleepers. I'm going to go with the Broncos to repeat that defense, but I think big push from the Raiders, and I like the Chargers too. I think Kansas City, the team that might take a little bit of a tumble there in that division. But that's a pretty good division top to bottom, better than it's been recently. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Scott, your boy, tell them who's coming.
Mark Givler from Buckeye Grove, Rivals Network.
There it is. That's coming up next here on CBD.
Bruce Hooley. Smart, savvy, straight to the point. Weekday afternoons at 5 on ESPN 850 WKNR, Cleveland.